This is Russ Cannelli inviting you to listen to El Paso Primetime, where we have a very exciting event that's occurring this evening. It's about art, science, music, and food. And it's going to be a dinner tonight at 4 o'clock, and it's going to be, we're going to find out exactly where it is and what it's about, because it's a fundraising event for music science fundraising. And here to tell us about it are three people directly involved. I'll ask you to introduce yourself first. Maria Alvarez, who is the organizer. Please say who you are and what you're doing.
Hello, I'm a biology professor at El Paso Community College and the director of the RISE program at EPCC, where we have students participate in a variety of research projects, and we're now tying this to music.
Okay, Daniel?
I'm Daniel Tillman. This is my third year as an assistant professor in the College of Education, focused on how we can make schools and education in general more engaging for students.
And next?
Yes, this is Song An, and I'm also a third-year assistant professor in the teacher education department at UTEP. And my research interest is about integration of music and math so that we can have more effective math education.
And in the past, we've had various people talking about 1309 Restaurant, the EPCC cooking school. And I'm a New Yorker, and I can tell you that when you want to taste something really delicious that you might find in New York, because top service, top cooking, go to 1309 EPCC, and that's where the event's going to be. Okay. So, Maria, tell us a little bit about what you have in mind.
I became interested in this topic a couple of years ago when I took a group of students to present the projects and to participate in a workshop at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland. And we coincided with a concert of the National Institutes of Health Philharmonia, which is an orchestra where the majority of the musicians are also researchers. They conduct scientific research at the premier institution of research in the world, which is the National Institutes of Health. So these are individuals that are very, you know, reputable scientists, and here they were, you know, playing beautiful classical music and making this beautiful art. It made an impression on me, and since then, I had the opportunity to take another two groups of students, and they are also amazed whenever they listen to these beautiful concerts. I started reading about the topic because I was, you know, surprised that these individuals can excel in both fields. So I started reading a little bit about the topic. I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm not an expert on that. But I started learning that music can have a significant impact on the brain. There is some anecdotal evidence that a lot of scientists who also play music are more successful. Einstein played the violin. And there's other composers like Borodin who composed classical music, and he was a chemist. So reading about it, I became very excited, and I wanted to bring this experience that we had in Bethesda, Maryland, to El Paso. And obviously I cannot bring the NIH Philharmonia to El Paso because it would be almost impossible. But we developed a project in collaboration with the El Paso Symphony Orchestra and the National Institutes of Health Philharmonia, the NIH Philharmonia. The conductor, Dr. Dalimonte, developed a program where she will feature the work of composers who were involved in both science and music. So there we have a program, and we call this concert The Doctor Is In. So we're trying to get funding for that concert. It will be free to the public. Again, we're trying to people to, especially young people, students, to experience this as early as possible so that we can motivate them to pursue both fields. So it'll be a concert to launch the event, and then we'll have a scientific symposium where we would invite scientists to talk about the effect of music on the brain and all sorts of applications, for example, music therapy, and then also the use of music to enhance learning, like our two guests are going to be talking about today. So for that, we need funding, and we're having this wonderful fundraising event tonight. From 4 to 6, we will have students at El Paso Community College and the Trans Mountain Early College High School present their research projects. This will be like a scientific poster session where people can come and listen to their presentations. The EPCC Orchestra will play towards the end of the event. And we will also have a silent auction where we have some cool items, like, for example, people will bid on them. Tickets to the El Paso Symphony Orchestra concert. We also have voice lessons from the El Paso Conservatory of Music by the director of the conservatory, Mr. Lofton.
You have to mention the Rocks, Jewelry, and Art.
Exactly. Rocks, jewelry and art, and books also on music and science and math. Mm-hmm. One of the authors is here, and he can tell you about his book as well. We'll have his book, and people can bid on them. And towards the end, you know, around 6 p.m., we'll have a fantastic dinner, which was created by the culinary arts students, Chef Daniel Guerra at EPCC, and his group have this wonderful molecular gastronomy piece. And yes, you know, you can integrate chemistry and culinary arts as well. So there will be a wonderful demonstration of that at this event. You know, at the end, we will have our two speakers, Dr. Tillman and then Dr. Song Ant, present on their studies that they've done.
Let me ask you, Song Ant, because, you know, all of us who are scientists, we always hear things like music of the spheres, you know, and connections between this. And recently we have seen some probes going out to Mars and asteroids, and they're reporting strange noises coming back in. So there's a lot of science and music and solar system. And so please tell us a little bit about what you think.
Well, so I do think music is one of the universal languages that not only can be used across all different kind of human beings, but also between animals and people from different planets. So I think, you know, noise is a very positive signal that living beings from different planets, they can communicate.
Yeah, and you are aware of what I'm talking about, that they're reporting these strange whistles and things that are coming back to us now?
I don't think we know the specific sounds you're talking about, but I will mention that the music that appeals to us as humans has so much to do with the music that birds make, the dances that bees do, the howling that wolves sing, the sounds of the ocean. And so when I was working with Dr. Ann on a project about water, I talked to my advisor at UVA, and he said, oh, I'm doing a project about musical instruments. It's very similar. And I said, my project about water and your project about musical instruments, what do they have in common? And he said, well, they're both about waves. And so it's really about patterns that are recognizable. Music is mathematics in time, just like geometry is mathematics in space. And so cosmology is mathematics in space and time. And therefore, it's really so complex. But clearly, patterns in time are just waves that to us are discernible through the ears. But to another species, that might be something they see, like a bat.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. And I've been reading articles where scientists are talking about this mathematical equation. The thing that fascinates me, when I was in school, everybody understood that there was a burst and the universe would expand and then come back, expand and come back. It's all wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it just keeps going.
There's no coming back.
It's not coming back. And there's a lot of those things that talk about dark energy and dark matter. They talk about waves like you're talking about that are really controlling the universe.
For algae, the algae reality is the world. You know, oh, there's sun. There's not sun. But to us, algae is just this thing on the ocean, on the beach, in the universe. To a mathematical perspective, when we objectify the universe, we're just the algae. But from our perspective, we're the center of the universe. And so both of those realities are equally true. But for one, we call objective, the other subjective. Well, you know, not really. It's really more like one is if I don't care about my thing, my goal. The other is like I'm at the middle and that's what's driving me. And I think the people who can transition between those two and everywhere in between are the ones who do well in life.
Well, it gave me a little nervous because algae, you said algae, you know, is the next sustainable fuel. Does that mean we're going to be the next sustainable fuel?
That's the whole idea
too?
Of the Matrix, right? We're just batteries for whoever comes next. And, you know, a great sci-fi guy said human beings are the reproductive organs for technology. You know, these plastic things we're making are going to long outlast us. And so really, you know, what's our legacy in the long term is very much determined by things that we don't even really think about because we're so focused on our own lives and our kids and our dogs.
Can you tell us, Maria, how you work together with these two gentlemen? I mean, it must be very interesting.
Well, this is a new collaboration that we just started, and I was very pleased that you know, I was able to contact both professors here at UTEP. I'm very interested in the educational aspects. Obviously, I'm a professor at EPCC, and we're always you know, trying to find new ways to enhance the understanding of math by our science students.
Yeah.
And if you know, if we can learn from the research and how we can accomplish this, how can enhance math learning by science students utilizing music, but what better way to do this? So I'm really looking forward to future collaborations and doing some work together.
Well, tell us, how do you see this for young STEM students? Do you give them music and science at the same time, or how do you see the relation for the youngsters?
Okay, so actually there are three different levels of connections between music and math. So the first level, we can call it a subject level, so which means when musicians are compose music, then they need to apply math in order to create their own patterns. And also for some musical instruments developers, in order to design more precise instruments, they also need to apply math. So we call it the first level, subject level. Then the second level, as recent researchers, especially scientists, they identified are at the cognitive level. So at the cognitive level, researchers find that for the people who have opportunities to listen to some classical music, their IQ, especially for the math part, can be improved at a certain level compared with the other people who may not have the equivalent chance to listen to classical music. Then the third level, we can call it at the pedagogical level, so which means we can use music as our math teaching activities so that students will have chance to apply math in a fun way so that they can compose music by using some mathematical patterns. And when they are composing music, they are also exploring math. So their math learning results will be some kind of beautiful musical works or some playable musical instruments that they can design by applying geometry or some other algebraic patterns.
You know, it's very interesting to me because in my experience here as a teacher and a scientist, I believe in active teaching. In other words, when I was a kid, you know, I did experiments in my backyard, and I remember playing the guitar, and all of a sudden there's this harmonic. What is a harmonic when I put the finger here? Stuff like that. And we do another show, Science Studio, with Keith Pannell, and we always ask the guest, how did you get into science? And there was one guy that told us, I'll never forget, a physicist. He said, well, when I was like 13 years old, I built an X-ray machine, which is pretty dangerous. And we said, well, what did you do with it? And he said, I went down to the Christmas tree Christmas Eve and I X-rayed all my presents. You can hear that on Science Studio. But this idea that children can learn science or music by putting their hands on it rather than sitting in a classroom and getting it sort of shoved down their throat.
And so I don't think it's a coincidence that our host is a biologist of the sciences. Biology is the one that for the longest time has not been able to hide in mathematics the way pure physicists have, or the way that many chemists have, or the way that many people who just want to really quantify the situation. Well, how do you quantify an ecosystem? You know, who's the alpha male? Is it the algae or is it the Wolverine? You know, I mean, it's just a cycle, right? So this whole idea of, you know, the apex predator, you know, that we like to think we are as the human species. Well, you know, we're just worm food one day, right? And so a biologist recognizes that as beautiful as the science and the mathematics is, the reality is messy. It's icky. It's sticky. It's complicated. It's contextual. It's very much motivated by my mood. One of my favorite studies was a professor I met at University of Virginia, psychologist, who showed that if I just ran up a hill, my interpretation of angles is that they're bigger because it looks harder. Everything looks harder when you're exhausted. And so he would show him pictures of a hill and they say, oh, that looks about 45 degrees. They go, okay, run up it. So they'd run up it. Oh, that's at least 60.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so the subjectivity of the biological organism that is processing the science we call biology is undeniable to a biologist. Whereas a physicist, some days they feel like they can get away from with ignoring it, and they can't.
No, I agree with you 100% about biology. When I grew up on the East Coast, I wanted to be a marine biologist. And then I got involved in bioremediation of the oil spills. And so I ask everybody, And I do this experiment with my grandchildren. The hydrocarbon degraders are everywhere, in every river, everywhere. Go and get two cups. Put the water in. Put a little Wesson oil in. Don't use motor oil. There's an inhibitor in there. And in one of them, put a little garden fertilizer. And the grandkids in these contests, you know, like 10 years old, are taking pictures every day, and they win contests just by figuring out that there's these organisms everywhere that consume the organics. So I agree with you that biology is still a great fascination for me, but I always thought it was a little harder than math.
Well, it's messier. It's messier. And things that are messier are just so much, by definition, difficult to get a grasp on. They're changing, you know? I mean, how can you study evolution and try to lock it down? You're studying the whole idea is it changes, right? And so, you know, you can call it a theory as if that's disparaging it, but it's certainly our best explanation of what's happening. And it seems to explain design of iPhones and McDonald's TV commercials and species just as easily. And so really thinking about how can we be respectful of the subjective experience of the individual and of other people and like try to be objective as scholars is really the challenge for a 21st century scholar. And we're all of us, whether you're doing creative literature or you're doing biology, we're all dependent now on what's the empirical evidence that we're succeeding? What's the evidence my book is making a difference? Even if it's poetry, what's the difference? What's the impact? The justification of art for art's sake is no longer acceptable in academia. That's now the domain purely of art.
Yes, so that's why now we want to insert one more letter into STEM so that we can make a STEAM, mm-hmm. So which means we will add the arts part always into the STEM learning process.
Well, I mean, I have students that are in the art department and in the materials department studying ancient sculptures and paintings. And, you know, it's a long thing, maybe from my family art background. I always thought that, you know, if you go into a cave and you see something, what pigments did they use?
So students who individually have curiosity and have been mentored can experience that. But the school system, particularly in K-12 and even more so in higher ed, is designed to support siloism and expertise.
The ivory towers.
The ivory towers start in K, where it's, oh, you're a literacy teacher, so you must not be good at math. Oh, you're a math teacher, you must not be good at history. And this idea that you're going to specialize and that the more you specialize, a better teacher you are, and that you're trying all along to discourage that type of interdisciplinary thinking is so built into our educational
system. It's really funny because my whole thing, I used to work for Exxon and was here, is interdisciplinary research, okay? And maybe we're going to have another show just on that too, but I want to make sure that Maria tells us more about what you expect from this.
Well, I expect that we will, you know, by doing these events, and this is the first one, that we will create more awareness of the importance of getting our students as early as possible to develop multiple talents, not just the scientific skills, but also the artistic skills. And I had the opportunity to listen to a presentation a couple of weeks ago where I took the students to present at this Abraham's meeting, and they had a writer. In a scientific meeting, they had a writer speak to the students. And he was talking about, you know, how he was puzzled that why he had been invited. And he said, you know, maybe I'm here because I'm supposed to tell you about all of these connections between art and math and other things. He says that as he was growing up, he was very good at math, that he could solve problems backwards, whatever that means. But he said, I was very good. And but that he let that talent die within him. And he became a very successful writer. And he says, now at my age, I wonder if I would have been a better writer if I had cultivated my mathematical skills. Mm. So, you know, that was the message, that you really need to promote both types of talents because they are synergistic. You know, all of these things, as you develop them, especially starting from young age, they really enhance the person, you know, as a whole. And, you know, they've danced. We used to believe that music, for example, or for example, that the brain could only change when we're young. And I think, and I'm not the expert, but I think new research indicates that the brain can change even in adulthood. The plasticity of the brain concept, you know, has been put forth. And they say that even a few lessons as a young individual, a few music lessons that you take, a little bit of exposure builds neural circuits in the brain that you can later on access. And I think I'm probably an example of that. I took piano lessons when I was little. But I stopped, like many of us. You know, we just concentrated on, I was a biologist, you know, I like science. I was playing with my chemistry kid and my biology kid. And I became a scientist and then a teacher. And, when I was exposed to this orchestra a couple of years ago, and I realized that you can be both, you know, I went back and started taking lessons again, piano lessons. And it's funny because I was able to get up to the level where I was as a child pretty quickly. You know, my instructor was amazed that I was picking up all of these so fast.
Yeah, well, please tell us, since we're running out of time, again, to be there where? Tonight,
yes,
at?
We need to be, you know, if you want to hear more about this, please be at the EPCC's Administrative Services Center. And this is by the Fountains, and it's, I forgot the name.
9050 Viscount is called 1309 Restaurant.
Yes, join us.
It's in the school, and again, I'm going to say that it was something that really impressed me, and we did have on the show once the chef director of it talking about food. And I have to say, I'm going to read the menu. Amuse-bouche, family-style cheese platter. First course, sous vide onion jam with beef consomme. Intermezzo, and this sounds a little bit scientific. Nitrogen pops prepared through the dining area? What's that? Entree, turducken, turkey and duck terrine topped with chicken snowflakes and cranberry sphere alongside baby carrots, beets, and potato au gratin. Dessert, mocha s'more torte. Torched through the dining area. Soft drinks and wine included. It really is something very spectacular because the service equals the what the food is, too. And it's something very, because basically the students go on and open restaurants and what have you. So we're going to end a little bit here with food. Okay, and we hope that you come back and tell us exactly whether you liked it or not, okay? So let's just finish. We got a few minutes here. Please, Song-an, any comments about this that you have?
Well, so I think, you know, this is a great opportunity for people to have a better understanding about the value of music and how music can be used as a valuable resources to help students to understand STEM.
To understand music?
Well, actually, both. So when they understand music at the same time, we have find more connections within and out of mathematics and science.
Maria, you have the final word. Very interesting, I think.
Yes. This is a fascinating topic and one that we really need to learn more about. So please join us tonight, and this will be one of the first of many more events that we can discuss.
And thanks very much to Maria Alvarez, Song-an, Daniel Tillman, and to our producer, Dennis Will. Thank you.
And joining us on El Paso Primetime this afternoon is Robert Rodriguez. He's with Cash America, the Montana location. And Robert, first off, welcome to El Paso Primetime.
Well, thank you for having me here.
We have a real interesting thing coming up in the neighborhood, but it's the neighborhood of good times, and it always helps the community. Let's talk a little bit about what Cash America does for kids, especially at this time of year.
Well, this time of the year, we are doing our community service by trying to collect as many unwrapped toys as possible for the kids, and then we'll go ahead and donate these toys to some organizations that are really in need of. This is something that our employees do with open heart and really enjoy doing this, and we always try to get as many toys as possible and always try to beat last year so we can fulfill some kids' dreams for Christmas.
I remember last year I participated in this whole thing, and it was such a great feeling right around this time of year. It's just like, you know, we always think about the kids at this time of year when we really should be thinking 365 days out of the year, but that's okay. I mean, this is what we do. So basically, we have a deadline to donate toys.
Yes, we do.
And that'll be coming up next Saturday.
Exactly.
Okay. So what do people have to do in order to be able to donate?
Just come and buy our stores. Just drop off an unwrapped toy. And most of the time we used to, help out the customers with some good deals too. The whole idea is we also want to give, the sharing and the giving is part of our spirit, Cash America.
Cash America is one of a growing number of pawnbrokers that over the years have changed the face of what used to be a rather unusual way of barter and trade in order to be able to make it through a month. And now you've become very much high tech and very much I would say very competitive with a lot of the retail and wholesale stores around town when it comes to trying to find a good deal or to help you out in case of an emergency.
Well, yes. We're there to help out the community. We do short-term loans for a month and 30 days, and it's all regulated by the state of Texas. We also, sell our merchandise at a good price, and we do offer a 30-day guarantee where the customer's not happy with it for whatever reason. It doesn't matter. You can bring it back. We're glad to give money back within 7 days, or we can go ahead and give them a store credit or exchange from 8 to 30 days.
That's the whole thing about the business you're in pawn and brokering, basically, is that you do help the community in very many different ways. And the community coming together to donate unwrapped toys is just one facet of a large thing that you guys do for the community.
Yes. We also do JDRF. It's one of our biggest campaigns, and we just got finished doing this. I don't have the figures, but I know we did very well. And I know that all proceeds goes to the research for finding the cure for juvenile diabetes.
Which, in of itself, we had a show not too long ago about juvenile diabetes, and it seemed like at one point in our lives, juvenile diabetes had taken a turn for the worse. And now, thanks to philanthropic help from you and from other organizations around the country, it seems like now the tide has turned on juvenile diabetes. And there is a thank you to say for, giving that process up.
Oh, yes. One of my nieces is diabetic. We discovered she had diabetes when she was 9 years old. And I know that through this foundation and through the doctor's helps, she can live a normal life, which I'm very happy because she is living a normal life.
That's great news. So once again, let's go ahead and tell folks about this toy drive and where they can go to drop off these toys, when they can do it.
They can go to any location. We have 13 locations in El Paso, and we're open from 9 to 6. Monday through Fridays and Saturdays, 9 to 5. We're also open on Sundays. We're extended hours from 10 to 6.
Okay. Robert, thank you so much for coming in. When it comes to time again to talk about the drive for juvenile diabetes and whatnot, we'd love to have you back and talk about that issue as well.
Well, thank you very much, Spencer. I really appreciate this very much. And thank you for helping us, reach some kids with some toys for Christmas.
Special thanks to Deidre Westenhauser for taping both segments of El Paso Primetime and for Bridget McAllister's help in editing both segments for this episode of El Paso Primetime. Louis Signs and Perspectives is next. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for listening.